This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. 1968 was the year that Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert Kennedy were assassinated. That year also saw the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, President Lyndon Johnson's decision not to run for re-election, and chaos at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. As the nation was in turmoil, college graduates were still collecting diplomas and preparing to enter what is called the real world 50 years ago. Western Michigan University's class of 1968 is marking its 50th class reunion with events surrounding this week's season opening football game. Rick Markoff was Western's senior class president in 1968. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Gordon.
As we sit here and talk, does it seem like 50 years have gone by, or are there things that you remember that seem more like maybe they were 50 minutes ago?
It seems more like 50 minutes ago. The time has gone by ever so rapidly.
And what was it like to be a college student in 1968? Some of the things I mentioned there in the intro were going on in the world. Did that create a certain feeling on campus?
Well, it was an amazing time to be a student on any college campus, but I think especially at Western Michigan University, there were four really big issues that not only faced college students, but faced our nation and literally were facing the world at that particular time. You touched upon race relations, Vietnam. There was the race for space, as well as this major cultural change with regard to drugs and music and free speech. And all that was intertwined with just trying to be a college student, and it was an amazing time, reported to by the likes of people like Walter Cronkite. There were so many dramatic things that were happening in the state of Michigan at that time. The burning of a number of buildings in Detroit in that very difficult summer going into our senior year, the assassination of Martin Luther King. Many people have no idea that on the campus at Western, the day after Martin Luther King was assassinated, a number of students took over the student union and locked themselves inside, African-American students. And many of us who were student leaders stood on the steps of the student union for more than 8 hours until calmer minds prevailed and the administration was able to work out some things with the students inside. And that was a very, very difficult day in the April of 1968. Many of us who were graduating later that month were trying to reconcile between what we were going to do after graduation, because many of us had draft boards as males. Then I used to say to my wife and to our boys, my draft board was in Bowling Green, Ohio. And if you were alive, if you could crawl, if you could make a noise, you were going to be drafted. And so the question was, not only were you going to go into the service, were you going to go in as an enlisted man or an officer? Were you going to take some type of deferment? Or were you going to go to Canada, for instance? Many difficult things weighing on the minds of young men and women at that time. The drug culture was just at its height, and many students experimented with drugs, and it was a difficult time. And all those question marks in people's minds were reflected in the music of the time, songs that came out for peace, songs that came out about what was going on with regard to going on in the world. And on campus at that time, while all this was taking place, there were a number of different speakers who came to the Western Michigan campus, from the Reverend Dr. Malcolm Boyd to Nazi leader George Lincoln Rockwell. And if you allow me, I want to read a quote from the Western Herald from George Lincoln Rockwell and tell me what this sounds like. In the very first paragraph of an article, it says, "My followers and I are a counter-revolutionary movement. We are getting distorted news, managed news, and false news. We are being kept from the facts. Things that people feel like are just now happening, were going on 50 years ago. And so, and tied all these things together was a tremendous race for space. Sputnik, the Apollo program, an emphasis on math and science. So that's just a taste of what was going on in the world and in the minds of students in 1968.
Well, let's go back for a moment there to what you mentioned about the assassination of Martin Luther King. And then the students, some of the African-American students actually engaging in protest. How tense was that moment when you wondered kind of, I guess, you know, what was going to finally happen with the students talking to the administration?
It was extremely tense. Friends who were in dorms together, fraternities together, sororities together, to people who knew each other growing up in Kalamazoo or Portage or whatever suburb, all of a sudden, when the assassination took place, lines were drawn. Ethnicity was so important, showing the strength that was needed at that very difficult time was definitely something that none of us had ever had to cope with before. College was this very special place. It was almost like utopia, where the cares of the world seemed to be outside or didn't quite impact you nearly as much when you were a college student. But all of a sudden, with the assassination of Martin Luther King, the real world came to our doorstep, and we all had to react, and all of us grew up an awful lot in those days of April of 1968.
I wonder sometimes, I guess, about students in college, but that's maybe for some of them the first time they really start to follow what's going on in the world, really, you know, maybe start to read the newspaper back then, I suppose, on a regular basis. And do you have the perspective when you're 18 to 22 to realize you are living in an extraordinary time? Or again, if this is kind of the first time you've really engaged in the world, do you just think that this is what the world is? What was your perspective at that time?
I think that when I was growing up, my parents were first generation Americans. All of my grandparents came from foreign countries. Three out of the four came to the United States because they needed to escape religious persecution in either Russia or Poland. And we were a generation born in 1946, the baby boomers, who were literally, people wanted us to succeed. And our parents did everything in their power for us to succeed. And many of us did not have to face trials and tribulations that our predecessors did before us. Our parents, many of the fathers, had served in World War II or in the Korean War or both. And so the pressures, I think, were not as great growing up. And so consequently, maybe we weren't as serious entering college as we could have been, but we certainly grew up really, really fast before we got our sheepskins and graduated in late April of 1968.
And as you mentioned, you came along as part of the baby boom generation, and many of the parents of baby boomers were either, you know, in the case of your parents, you know, first generation Americans, perhaps they were World War II veterans. And having been through, and also people who might have lived through the Depression. So did the counterculture then happening at Western Michigan University and in other campuses, did that create some resentment among those parents who maybe felt like, you know, we sacrificed so much and now we get this, you know, we get more drugs and we get the music and sort of this, you know, showing of expression, which is going on college campuses at that time?
You know, I can only answer for what was going on in the Markov household. There wasn't that kind of item going on in our particular home, but I cannot speak for, you know, other students. And the fact of the matter was there were so many different things were happening on campus, and you had individuals who were getting into becoming highly involved in being more radical in their beliefs. There was a group on campus that had communist leanings. There were a group that other individuals who were highly involved in drug culture, and yet just as dominant were fraternities and sororities and arts and drama and you know, sports. And it was just an amazing mix of individuals. And I think you could find anything you wanted to seek out on the Western campus at that time.
As you noted, there were tensions over race and maybe over some other issues. You were in a position of student leadership. Did you think that there was a certain responsibility for the way you should handle yourself and the way you should interact with students, given some of the various, I guess you might say, polarization that was happening?
I think that it brought out the best in leadership skills for many of us. And I take a look at the successes that so many individuals had when they graduated from Western, going on to find medical careers, find legal careers, community service, you name it, and business leaders, so on and so forth. And every opportunity or every adversity actually gave an opposite and equal seed for opportunity to do good. And I think that far more students came out in that particular vein. But speaking of that, some of the things that I think your audience might be interested in at that particular time, Dr. James Miller was president at Western student body when I came there as a sophomore. I didn't go to Western my freshman year, numbered 14,400. My senior year was the opening of Miller Auditorium, and people like Roger Williams and the Norman Luboff Choir came to campus. The dorms out in what's called the Valley were pretty brand new at that time, and as I said, fraternities and sororities were strong. Cigarettes at the Student Union cost 35 cents, and gasoline at the Bronco gas station was 26 cents a gallon. But one of the two things that really stood out in my mind were computers were just coming onto campus at that time, and those who were learning to use a computer were, their computers were driven by punch cards, and most individuals have no idea what a punch card happens to be. And the year, my junior year, was what they called the Great Storm of 1967, which just in one fell swoop delivered more than 2 feet of snow on campus and closed down the campus for 5 days. And so those were just some of the things that were going on at that particular time that were a little bit more fun to look back on.
And as you note, there were a couple of those items. It certainly was a time where Western Michigan University was growing in terms of the number of students. Doctoral programs were just kind of getting started at that time, and then the opening of Miller Auditorium. Could you appreciate that as a student, that this university that you had decided to attend was kind of taking off a little bit and going in some new directions?
Oh, it was an amazing time as far as growth of the university. And but it was anchored by excellent stability. As I mentioned, Jim Miller was the president. Dr. Russell Seibert was the vice president for academic affairs. And they were brilliant, brilliant men. Athletics were anchored by two of the great names in Western sports coaching, and Charlie Maher, who was the baseball coach, and George Dales, who brought national championship cross country to the university. A fun fact was the first concert I ever went to at Western. I paid $1 to go see my first concert at Reed Fieldhouse. And for $1, the entertainers were Mary Wells, the Shirelles, Major Lance, and Jay and the Americans. And we had back-to-back football All-Americans at that time in Bob Rowe and in Dale Livingston, who both went on to have very fine professional careers. And so not only was there growth, but there was so much fun that was going on. And the more fun that I had, my GPA kept going further and further down. But I had such a great experience being involved in student life, and which allowed me to have, and for so many to have, bring out the best as far as not only an excellent academic preparation, but a preparation for life, period.
But we mentioned Vietnam a while back. You would end up serving in Vietnam a couple of years after you left Western. Take us through what happened.
Right. You know, it's not only me. The gentleman who is the vice chairman of this reunion, Norm Gottlieb. Let me talk about Norm first before me, because more people in Kalamazoo might recognize Norm. Norm graduated from Kalamazoo Central, came to Western. He was captain of the track team and president of the varsity, the W Club, at that time. Norm went on from ROTC at Western Michigan University to become an aviator in the Army. Went to, after his training at Fort Knox and down in Alabama, where he learned how to fly helicopters, went to Vietnam and flew what were called Cobra attack helicopters on the demilitarized zone. Norm was very highly decorated, went on to a career that lasted parts of four decades in the Army, served at the Pentagon and in Crystal City, and retired as a full bird colonel. In 2004, Norm was inducted into Western's ROTC Hall of Fame. And he is an amazing individual, born and raised in Kalamazoo. My career was absolutely very small compared to Norm's, as I spent 2 years in the military after getting my bachelor's at Western. And before I got my doctorate at the University of Toledo, I went to the University of Missouri and got a master's in higher education and also my ROTC commission. And after various stints at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and Fort Knox, and back to Fort Sill for Vietnam orientation, spent a tour of duty in Vietnam. And believe it or not, Norm and I had the opportunity to get together while we were stationed in Vietnam. We've been together all over the world, and which was part of an amazing relationship and friendship that even allowed him to be the best man in my wedding back in 1972. The long and the short of it is that, and this is just one person's opinion, as I mentioned, my grandparents came to the United States so that they could avoid religious persecution. My father and my future father-in-law at that time both served in the Army during World War II. And what I found when I went to Vietnam, for sure, is that we are ever so lucky to have all the great things that freedom allows us to have in this country. And I also found that Uncle Sam has always been much better to me than I've been to Uncle Sam. And so very proud of that particular time in my life. It allowed me the service in the military at that time allowed me to do a lot of growing up, learn how to make mistakes and still not be fired from a job, and to learn how to listen more than talk, because a lot of junior officers did not come back from Vietnam because they thought that they knew more than the enlisted men who surrounded them. And a lot of junior officers did not survive. And so, consequently, we do indeed live in the greatest country in the world and blessed with wonderful institutions like Western Michigan University. And I'm just so glad that I had that opportunity. And, you know, I wouldn't trade that experience for anything else I've done ever.
And tell us some more about what you did do after serving in the military, getting your doctorate at the University of Toledo. Where did life take you from there?
Well, One third of my career was in college administration. I served as alumni relations director at Western Michigan University, associate vice president at Adrian College. From there, I spent one third of my career as a hospital administrator in Toledo, as the president of a major hospital foundation. And then in 1995, my wife and I, along with our younger son, because our older son was already at Ohio State, went to Indianapolis. And the vast majority of my time spent in Indianapolis, I headed up what's called the Simon Youth Foundation for Simon Property Group and the Simon family. Simon Property Group is the nation's largest and the world's largest owner of upscale retail space, malls. And what we did is we put schools and malls for at-risk youth or high school-age kids and had a major scholarship program. And I was able to give out more than $1.4 million a year in scholarships. Retired at age 64 for 4 days and became the senior advisor to the chancellor at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis, and taught graduate courses in organization leadership. Went to retire, but at age 67, 68, and was asked to create a foundation for the state's largest provider of services for those who have autism and other mental challenges, and which was a very rewarding year and a half. But I promised myself I would never work at age 70, so I retired. The retirement is wonderful, and I'm pleased to say that next month, the University of Toledo Press is publishing my first book, and so I've managed to stay very busy in retirement.
That doesn't even sound like retirement yet if you're writing a book while you're retired.
Well, retirement is something that, you know, if you are proactive and take it by the horns, it can be tremendously exciting. The great thing is you can do when you want to do it, what you want to do, and how you want to do it. The book item was something that I never had time to do when I was working and as a husband and a father and someone who is involved in the community. And so this is great, and it was a fun project. It's about, the name of the book is Million Dollar Memories and the Amazing Professionals Who Helped Make Them Possible. And it's about some of the finest fundraisers in the United States, either the first million-dollar gift that they raised or their most impactful million-dollar gift. And it'll be a great read for people who are interested in nonprofits or who serve on boards, who are volunteers for various nonprofit organizations, or whoever considered making a transformational gift to an organization, a nonprofit that they highly revere. So that's what's been going on.
So I want to go back to something that you said early on, that certainly 1968, America was very divided. And we live in a time now when people, again, see us as being divided and things are very polarized. Can you compare then to now? I mean, do you see similarities and do you see differences?
That's a very good question. I see a difference in this country because of the fact that for some reason at the present time, the word civility seems to have disappeared. There was always, no matter how much you may have disagreed with someone else over a political issue, over a social issue, over whatever the issue might have been, there was always a show of respect for your opponent and a desire to find ways of being able to work together. The word compromise was something that was positive in nature and not negative in nature. And I think that people really, because of the fact that there were so many new Americans and first-time educated individuals, that it was much, much easier to find ways to create wins for your opponent, wins for you, and wins for the people that you served. And people don't seem to want to work. And once again, this is just one person talking. And so I hope that your listeners will understand that it's only one person's opinion. But people may not work as hard today to try and find those win-win-win solutions. And it behooves us, because of the fact, as I said, what I learned in the service and seeing what other people don't have versus what we have. If we only realize all the blessings that we have in this country, I think we would work much, much harder together to find solutions to whatever seems to ail us and go forward. So I hope that that got at a little bit of what you were asking.
Tell us about some of the things that will be happening this week with the 50th class reunion for Western Michigan University's class of 1968.
Outstanding. First of all, the reunion program at Western had been gone for 15 or 16 years, and we had such a great group of people that I was privileged to go to school with. I felt it was a shame if we weren't able to get back together, and thanks to people like Hardy Figueroa and Chris Perdell and certainly President Ed Montgomery were able to get a one-day reunion program reestablished for our 50-year reunion. And most of the activities will take place on what most people know as the East Campus, where the Heritage Hall, the Alumni Center, is located, and we'll gather shortly before 2 o'clock and have an official class photo. There will be tours of Heritage Hall. There will be the typical Western Stampede tailgate party from 3 to 6 on the Grand Lawn. By the way, if there are members of the class of 68 who are listening, or people know people who graduated at that time, it's not too late to register, and I'll go about that in just a moment. At the Stampede, there'll be a special 20 by 20 reunion tent for our class, and people just have to look for the 50-year reunion banners. That'll run from 3 to 6. The ball game, no matter who you are, if you appreciate good college football, the Broncos open up against Syracuse, who last year, as people may remember, upset the number one team in the nation, Clemson, 27-24. So this will be a real challenge right out the gate for Western. There will be a number of announcements about our class at the ball game. There will be a special reserve section for seating, and people can still get good seats as part of their registration. And all they have to do is either visit mywmu.com/50th reunion, or they can call the concierge at Western 269-387-8746. So it's going to be a fantastic day. I placed one of our classmates earlier today, a guy by the name of Glenn Cherup. He's been placed in charge of weather, and he's going to make sure that everybody enjoys a good weather day this Friday, August 31st.
Rick Markoff was president of Western Michigan University's senior class in 1968. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon.